Hey there, nursing community. Welcome back to another episode of Two Male Nurses.
Two Male Nurses.
Where two male nurses are going to talk about nursing, and you guys are hopefully going to learn something, especially today. We're going to be discussing the oxyhemoglobin dissociation curve. Stay tuned. Hey, welcome back. So today we are going to be discussing the oxyhemoglobin dissociation curve. Just the other day at work, I was there and one of the RTs, and RTs know everything.
They literally know everything.
They know everything. They start quizzing us on the oxyhemoglobin dissociation curve and started stumping myself, fellow nurses that have been there a while, and even our nurse practitioner was kind of like, wait a minute. Okay, now we're on the right track, okay? And so we were going to, so Ben and I were just wanting to kind of dig into this a little bit more, discuss it, and get to a solid definition of what it is and how we can apply this in our role as a nurse.
Totally, yeah. And I remember when we first read this concept, it was actually a while ago when we were studying for a cert, the book says, this is according to Barron's, this is the Barron's CCRN book, it's a great resource. The book leads out by saying, for this test, you will need to understand a high-level concept. And I read it and I laughed, like, high-level is, you know, come on, high-level. Well, then I read the concept four times and I still didn't understand it. It's like, wow, this is high level. This is very high level.
High level concept.
High level here. Concept. So it definitely something that may be not easy to grasp right away, but it's very interesting and it's a very fascinating concept. And even when Andrew was saying, a couple of nurses, we just like didn't get it. I went and looked up and I found a study of pediatric nurses showed that 84% of clinicians felt they had received adequate training. 40%. Only 40% correctly identified how a pulse oximeter actually worked.
Wait. So just how it worked, not like
just how it
what
worked.
It meant.
Exactly. Okay, like this is how this piece of equipment that we use works. Only 15% had a correct understanding of the oxyhemoglobin dissociation curve. So 15% of the study were able to say, hey, this is what this is. Definitely something that nurses may not completely understand how it works. You heard it in school one time and that was it. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna dive into it.
Yeah. This is something that definitely needs to be reviewed and for us to be able to understand and
For ourselves as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally. Yep. So there's two lab values that you gotta kind of get.
Yeah.
Since this concept is based around two lab values.
The relationship between PaO2 and SaO2.
Right.
Ben, discuss PaO2.
Sure. So PaO2 is a measurement of oxygen content in your arterial blood. It's a measure of the oxygen content in your arterioles, in the little tiny arterioles, your PaO2, that's the oxygen in those arterioles.
Okay.
And that's basically it.
So that's a direct measurement, and how do you get a PaO2? That's not what's on the monitor, right?
Right. I mean, and you get that with an ABG and with an equation. There's an equation to get that. It is also referring to partial pressure and the pressure required for that gas to push through. And that's kind of a different thing that we're not going to talk about today.
Okay.
That we can definitely go into another time, but that's what PaO2 is.
Okay, what's a normal range for PaO2?
Yeah, you want it, what is it, 80 to 100?
80 to 100 is like, you know, is like ideal. And then...
And that's on room air.
On room air, yeah. But then once we get to 60, that's like the minimum amount of PaO2 we can have and still be oxygenating our tissues. It's like the bare minimum.
Correct. So 60 is your low number where you're still getting perfusion to your tissues.
Barely.
Exactly. It's the low number.
Gotcha. So that's PaO2.
PaO2.
And in a nutshell.
Right. And that's P little AO2. So.
Okay. All right, so then we're going to discuss SaO2, which we are probably a little bit more familiar with. This is what almost, you know, every nursing unit has on their monitor, the pleth that's going up and down, that is your SaO2. And SaO2 is the oxygen saturation, or O2 sat, that's what we call it. And it is the percent of hemoglobin binding sites in the blood that are carrying oxygen. Okay. So imagine that a hemoglobin has all these, you know, spots that can carry oxygen to your tissues and everything. And it is basically telling you the percent of how saturated they are. Basically, like how much oxygen is being carried to your tissues. And it uses it by using that red light that can kind of like, you know, differentiate between that. And when it receives that light on the other side, it's like, it's an equation there too, that little thing does and gives you a percentage. And a normal percent is anywhere from like, you know, 96, 94 up to like 99%. That's, you know, what you want on room air. Once you get below 90%, that is where we get into that issue with our, once you're, so the correlation there is your SaO2, once you get at 90%, will be 60 millimeters of mercury PaO2. And that's where you're starting to struggle to oxygenate.
Correct.
And I'm struggling to breathe right now. So.
So those two numbers actually correspond. And if you see an O2 sat, an SaO2 sat of 90, you want to think, hey, my PaO2 is 60.
Yeah.
They correspond.
Everybody knows that, though.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that.
Low-level concept.
Yeah, low-level concept.
So those two correspond, except when your curve is off.
And that's what we're going to talk about.
And that's what we're going to talk about, the curve. So go ahead, jump in. So the curve, if you have a picture in front of you, we're looking at the picture right now. It's the oxyhemoglobin disassociation curve.
Yeah, you can just Google a picture of it. It'll come up. It's a very common, like, you know, this is round.
Yeah. And so between 90 and 100, your curve is really flat. It's a very flat line. Your oxygen is attached to the hemoglobin. It's a flat line. It's working perfectly. But mm-hmm. below 90, it dips just straight off.
Yeah.
And that's where you start having issues.
Right. So on here, they always have the line of where it's, you're at 90% SaO2 and where you have the 60% PaO2 meeting. And that's like right in the middle, you know, there on that graph and everything, that kind of shows you that relationship. And you can kind of see that if your SaO2 is 80 and you go over, oh, now we're at 40% PaO2, a dramatic drop. And that's bad. You know, you're just really struggling to oxygenate at that point. So as nurses, what we can understand here and what we can, you know, draw from this oxyhemoglobin dissociation curve is that there is a right shift and a left shift on the curve, okay? And there are different things that cause a left shift and a right shift, and we're just going to discuss those now.
Okay, cool. So really quick before that, I just want to make sure that we understand hemoglobin and oxygen. Hemoglobin is, it's kind of the train car.
Yeah.
So hemoglobin is carrying the oxygen. The oxygen comes out, it's perfused through your lungs and your alveoli. Now it's in your blood, it's in your hemoglobin. The hemoglobin has room for four oxygen molecules, and that little train car, the little hemoglobin train car, carries those four oxygen molecules out to the body. So this curve is something that's going to affect how the little train car carries the oxygen molecules out to the body. So yes. Go ahead, tell us about the left shift, basically, Andrew.
All right, so a shift to the left is caused by several different things. One of them is a state of alkalosis. That will cause a shift to the left. You know, so, I mean, someone who's like, you know, hyperventilating, they can be. And then also hypothermia, and that is a way that can cause a left shift. And I feel like as nurses, that is a, you know, a time when we, you know, would experience this a lot with like targeted temperature management protocols after post-arrest. Also, low levels of 2-3 DPG will cause a shift to the left. Ben, do you want to tell us what?
Go ahead. Tell them about 2,3 DPG.
Okay, so 2,3 DPG is a organic phosphate that is found in red blood cells that alters the ability for an oxygen or for the hemoglobin to carry oxygen. Sorry, I kind of stumbled over that. But basically, it alters its affinity. And so that's kind of the next word we need to talk about here to understand this, okay? The affinity for the affinity of a hemoglobin's for oxygen is going to be in this relationship. Okay, an increase in affinity causes the oxygen to lock onto the hemoglobin, or a left shift. Okay, our decrease in affinity causes a release for the oxygen off of the hemoglobin, or a right shift. So that's kind of how we remember it. You know, left shift, oxygen locks onto the hemoglobin. Right shift, oxygen is willing to release off of the hemoglobin. And that's kind of the bare minimum there. So increased affinity, increased locking onto the hemoglobin. You know, decreased affinity, it's more willing to give it up.
Perfect. Great. Okay, I love that. So lock is left.
Yeah.
Lock, hold on. And then you got the right. Yeah. So the right shift, the things that make the curve shift to the right or release are the exact opposite of the ones that make it shift to the left or make it lock or hold on. You have acidosis, or a high hydrogen ion content. You have the high fever, you got the high temperature. You have a high PaCO2, which again is that acidosis. You have a high 2-3 DPG. So the 2-3 DPG is that phosphate protein compound. And you can kind of think about that almost like taking the spot of the oxygen on the train car. So if you have a lot of that 2-3 DPG, it's taking one of those four slots on the train car. So all of a sudden you don't have room for the oxygen, and it kicks it off. It boots it off. It releases it easier. But since the another way with the mnemonics they always talk about is like low left, low left. So if it's a shift to the left, everything's low. You have alkalosis. You have a low PaCO2. You have a low temperature, low hypothermia, low 2-3 DPG. And everything to the right is high.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another way of remembering that curve.
Right. So when we talk about that shift to the left, you know, what is happening is that the SaO2 will be high because the oxygen is literally stuck to the hemoglobin because of the increased affinity, because of the hypothermia or the low 2-3 DPG.
Correct. Okay.
So your SaO2 will be high, which like looks good. Potentially got 98-100% on there, but it's not actually being released or kicked off those hemoglobin. Okay, a shift to the right, your SaO2 may appear low, like low 90s, maybe even high 80s and everything, but the oxygen is being easily, you know, kicked off of the hemoglobin.
Right. Now, it may not be getting out at the right train station, though. So it may be being kicked off before it gets to your tissues.
Right.
So you don't want, just in the back of your mind, you don't want to think, hey, he's a little feverish. He's releasing the oxygen just fine. He's oxygenating great. He's releasing, not necessarily, they may be getting off the train a little early. They may not be getting all the way to the tissues.
Right.
So you have these septic, feverish patients, sats a little weirdly low, you can't get it up, and their lactic's high.
Mm-hmm.
So they're acidosed, they're acidotic. That's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that to look at this concept and relate it to oxygenation and the blood and all these different labs.
Yeah.
It's just that big picture stuff.
Right. Absolutely.
High level concept.
This is a high level concept.
High level concept.
All right. So, there's different stuff that affects 2-3 DPG, whether that's going to be increased or decreased. We don't really need to go into that today, except for one that we wanted to mention. A decrease in, or what causes a decrease in 2-3 DPG is someone who's receiving multiple transfusions of banked blood.
Banked blood is okay. Huge. So banked blood is and we see it all the time in SICU with these MTP patients.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, you see these patients that we're actually going to be concerned about this disassociation curve and everything. It could be very probable that they're going to be receiving a ton of blood, okay? And obviously, you know, receiving blood affects, you know, certain electrolytes and all that kind of stuff. But specifically in relation to this, our oxyhemoglobin dissociation curve, it causes a decrease in 2-3 DPG. And why is that?
Yeah, well, basically, there's a couple of different studies exemplified this, but your banked blood, the products or chemicals they use to preserve the blood, the preservatives meant to stabilize the blood for long periods of time and storage, actually breaks down, has an effect on the ATP in the blood molecule. And that breakdown in ATP in turn breaks down the 2,3-DPG. Okay. So your banked blood is going to have a low concentration of 2,3-DPG, which in turn, after getting MTP, after getting 8 units of this blood, is going to lower your proportion.
Right. So like, like a ratio between your normal amount of 2,3-DPG in your body, and then also you have all this blood in there that replaced, you know, that doesn't have very much 2,3-DPG.
Totally.
And so then your ratio is off.
Totally.
Okay. That makes sense. So
these patients that get this MTP, they're already probably having problems oxygenating and perfusing, and this is just another thing that's going to affect that.
Right. And MTP makes your patient cold.
True.
That's cold blood.
True.
Well, you can get in through the warmer, through the level one and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. All so right. As a nurse, I guess, again, these are a couple of different ideas and concepts, but as a nurse, why does this matter? Why do we care?
Right.
You can sit in the nurse's station and flex. You know, mm-hmm. You can flex your
high-level concepts.
You flex your high-level concepts, but does it really matter to your patients? I guess that's what we want to kind of touch on.
So I think as a nurse, like, why we should, you know, understand this concept is because it helps us understand, like, the interventions that we're doing. You know, when we're doing the TTM and we're, like, having this, like, we want this certain PaO2, or we have, like, why did we turn the FiO2 up to this? Or, you know, just understanding it, I think it will help us, you know, care for our patients better. Help us know when to reach out to docs for more help because of, like, hey, I saw this happening. This shift might be happening. You know, they're super acidotic, or they have this high fever, or they're super cold. And, you know, it will help us provide better care just understanding this high-level concept.
Totally, yeah. I mean, we as nurses, you know, you get this idea of, oh, his pressure's up, and the doctor put in a blood pressure medication, and there's that connect. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they put in these orders where you don't completely get it.
Right.
And you're out at the nurse station complaining about it. Why is he changing this one little thing?
Why from low pressor to Coreg? Are you kidding me? They're both beta blockers.
Beta blood's the same. But this understanding of, hey, there's more to these concepts and maybe a little bit more that we're not looking at. Mm-hmm. These small changes in patient conditions that may be relating to a bigger problem. I mean, kind of like you were talking about with that patient when you guys were at the nurse station and the RT was grilling you. You said that his O2 sat was just a little weirdly low.
Right, yeah. So basically what was happening is that I had a patient who was, you know, a neuro patient. They had, like, anoxic brain injury, and they had one of those, like, you know, neuro fevers that are just, like, you know, crazy high, very hard to regulate. Temperature was up to, like, 105.
Okay,
so a temperature
of... What was his SaO2?
Oh, we'll get to that. Okay, so on the oxyhemoglobin dissociation curve, when we have someone that is having a fever, we are having a shift to the right.
Shift to the right.
Okay, and right means release. Okay, so it is just getting off. Okay, all the oxygen is just, you know, getting off those hemoglobins and everything, right? Okay, they're on 70% FiO2, and their SaO2 on the monitor 92%.
Okay. It's a little weirdly low. He's already got oxygen. You know, he's getting oxygen.
They've ruled out PE, you know, like, all this stuff. Like, what's going on here? Okay. And we're, like, trying to, you know, figure it out. But it's, like, you know, it's still adequate, but, you know, we saw it's in 92%. Okay. Finally, we, you know, start doing some good nursing interventions and try to, you know, control this fever, get the Blanketrol, you know, get some ice packs, you know, all that kind of stuff. Temperature goes from 105, we get it down to 102. Okay.
What's his SaO2?
SaO2 now is 95, 96. Okay.
That's crazy.
And I go look at the vent. I was like, okay, who went up to 80% FiO2? Nope, 70%. Okay. Then as we continue to cool them and everything, we get their temperature down to, like, 101 or 100, you know, in that area. The SaO2, 98 to 100%.
Crazy.
Yeah. And that's what's happening there is exactly what we were talking about, dissociation curve.
And you know, we can't sit here and say that's what it was, 100%.
Right.
And now that we fixed his fever, he's breathing great. It's not we're saying that, but it's these tiny little, it's just a little piece of the puzzle. Right. Hey, you tweaked this problem, and here's how that affected that. And just understanding that as nurses, I think, is just invaluable. And that's just so cool, man. Believe you. And again, and thinking that big picture of, like, okay, his sat's weirdly low. Let's bump his, you know, give him more oxygen. Give him more oxygen. Like, let's give, you know, and if you want to be real high level, give him some PEEP. Or let's give him some tidal volume. You know, let's do this. Right. Like, can we get some BiPAP in here? Where's RT? I never, where are you going to give him? They're never where I need them. But instead, you fix the temperature, and you bump his O2 sat a little bit. You bump it just a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. That's so cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And it's just, you know, understanding this high-level concept definitely can, you know, it can just kind of make you feel a little bit more comfortable at work and understand, you know, okay, this is what's going on. We know what we need to do. We know how to fix it. You know, we're good. All right. Okay. So I think we should just, you know, kind of summarize what we talked about a little bit. So in summary, the oxyhemoglobin dissociation curve is a relationship between the oxygen available to your tissues and the hemoglobin's ability to release it.
Good. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would say in even simpler terms, this concept is how our blood carries and releases oxygen.
That's it. If you think about that in your head, this is how our blood carries and releases oxygen.
Yeah.
That's the concept in really simple words.
Yeah, that's it.
So we hope that was helpful to you guys. It was definitely helpful for us just looking at all this and playing with it. If you have any questions, you know what to do. You know where to hit us up at. And
slide into our DMs.
We look forward to hearing from you. You know who it is.
Yeah. Two male nurses. Two male nurses. Catch you next time. Two Male Nurses expressly disclaims any liability in association with the content provided in this podcast.